Find other great podcasts like this one at podmoth.network.
Welcome to The Ugly Radio on the Podmoth Network, a lo-fi sci-fi audio theater anthology series made for late nights and strong drinks. Join us monthly as we broadcast a pirate signal across time and space, featuring stories, songs, and frequencies from a rotating list of voice actors, writers, storytellers, and musicians. If you're looking for high-quality science fiction, skin-crawling horror, and other genre fiction, listen to The Ugly Radio on the Pod Moth Network, now available wherever you get your podcasts. The Ugly Radio. See you in the void.
I'm Jess.
And I'm Jen.
And we're the hosts of the What the Fuck Is That podcast.
Have you ever wondered, what the fuck is that? Well, we found the podcast that dives deep into the mysterious and the unexplained.
Picture this: gripping storytelling, unexpected twists, with a touch of humor just to keep you on the edge of your seat. All of that and more on the What the Fuck Is That podcast, your go-to destination for chilling true crime, spine-tingling mysteries, and paranormal wonders.
So if you're ready to unravel the unknown, search for WTF Is That podcast on Spotify and hit that follow button.
Trust us, you won't want to miss a single spine-chilling episode. Subscribe now and join the mysterious journey. Bye!
Welcome to the Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy podcast. I'm Declan, the son.
And I'm Jane, the mom. This is the podcast where we talk about brutal crimes, bizarre occurrences, and get you drunk with cocktails themed around one of our stories. To lighten things up, we'd like to end our time with a chaser. Please keep in mind some of our stories might be upsetting to young or sensitive ears.
We love hearing from our listeners, so feel free to contact us by email or social media. You can find our contact info in the show notes for this episode. If you'd like to support us through Patreon, you can find us there at Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy Podcast, or use the link in our show notes.
Alrighty. Thanks for joining us once again, everybody, for a Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy episode. How are you today, Mom?
I'm doing good. And how are you, bud?
I'm good. Just a chill little weekend. What story do you have for us today?
Well, before I get into my story, my short part of the story, I wanted to read off a new Apple podcast review that we had. This one is short and sweet. It's from Billy Butcher. It says, 5 stars, great stuff. Apparently, Billy is man of few words. So we just appreciate it. Thanks again. And if anybody out there wants to leave us a review on Apple Pods, we'd love to have it and read it out and say thanks directly to you. So I'm always checking it to see if we have any new ones. We've had a couple of new ones recently, so I appreciate the effort put forward out there. So yeah. Thanks, everybody.
We always love new reviews.
For sure. I am a sucker for nice things being said to me. So, I mean, if you want to make my day, compliment me. It doesn't matter if you compliment my shoes, my hair, the fact that I brushed my teeth. All of those things are fantastic. Just, I am a sucker for compliments.
And I myself cannot take them well, but go ahead and leave us a compliment for my mom here.
Well, certain compliments I take well, and certain compliments I'm like, oh, I don't agree with you. You know, I'm a girl, and so I don't take some compliments well, but random stuff, I'm like, oh, for sure, yes, compliment me about my pants, you know. Or if you want to be podcast specific, compliment us about our podcast, because then we'll tell everyone about what a wonderful person you are. And we'll compliment you for being a badass for saying that we're badasses.
Yes.
But back to today's agenda, I am going to be telling you about a cult. But okay. This one, this is a different kind of cult. And I don't want to make any spoilers. I mean, it's different, but it's the same. This one has some differences. So we'll get into those differences in a bit. But what are you going to be telling us about?
I'm going to be talking about the Angel of Death, is his nickname.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know why. It doesn't really makes sense for the story, but it says that his nickname is the Angel of Death on Wikipedia, so okay. I'm just gonna go with it.
Okay. All right, cool.
And to go with this story, I have the Angel's Delight cocktail, just right on the nose with this one.
Well, I do like the name, I will say that.
Yes, it looks very nice. Also,
it's pretty. It's so pretty.
Yes. Yeah, so something you bust out at a cocktail party.
Yes.
So to make this, you need 3/4 ounce of gin, 3/4 ounce of triple sec, 1 ounce of cream, and 2 to 3 dashes of grenadine. So not very strong at all. Should be fairly good.
It's a tiny cocktail. It's so small.
Yes.
Like I had to find a small glass to put it in. Yeah. It's almost a shot glass size. Like if you had a big fat shot glass, it would be perfect for that.
Yeah. So to make this, add all ingredients to a cocktail shaker with ice, shake well, and strain into a chilled small cocktail glass.
Right. It's complicated.
Yes, very complicated. You need a mixology degree to even make this drink. Right. So let's give it a try, Mom.
Okay. So
I like the cream and the grenadine. It's very like almost milkshakey.
Yes, true. And I've had some really bad drinks with cream in them in the past. So when I see cream in a cocktail, I kind of shy away from it. But recently have been getting into it more because of a fantastic espresso martini I had that I fell in love with. And it had cream in it. And it was super delicious. And now I've taken to making cold brew coffee so that I can make cold brew liqueur at home. And I have a...
Interesting.
Yes, it's so good. But this cocktail, I normally would have been like, ugh, it's got cream in it. But it's actually tasty. I like it. It's not too strong, like you said. Bad. No, it's good.
I think it's... Because, I mean, cream is the largest ingredient in there, so...
Yeah, it's creamy.
It kind of dilutes from the other... I mean, you can kind of taste a little floral from the gin, but it's overpowered by most other ingredients. So
yeah,
I think it's decent. It's not too bad. I'd finish it.
Yeah, nice.
Okay, so let's get into the Angel of Death. Roberto was born in Buenos Aires, Argentina on January 19th, 1952 to Victor and Josefina Pouch.
What's his name?
Victor was a mechanic. Robledo. R-O-B-L-E-D-O.
Okay, that's an interesting name. Robledo. Okay. We'll just call him Angela.
I'm
going to
struggle through it this entire episode.
That's why his nickname is the Angel of Death, because people can't say his name without
his name easily.
Biting their tongue.
Yeah. So Victor was a mechanic and Josefina was a housewife who immigrated to Argentina from Germany around the time of World War II, which there's fear conspiracy theorists. There's a rabbit hole to that, but
yeah.
Robledo was a quiet and shy kid who excelled at piano and was studying German from his mother. He was often bullied at school and would retaliate by stealing from his classmates, especially those who bullied him. When he was 15, he was expelled from school when he was caught stealing money from the secretary's office. This caused him and his father's relationship to suffer, and the two struggled to get along after this. A year later, in December, Robledo.
Right.
Okay. I'm just going to call him Rob.
So I look, because I was curious about the last name. I looked him up, and his first name is Carlos. He might not have gone by that.
Yeah.
But you could easily say Carlos.
Just switch to Carlos. Yeah.
Robledo. Switch to
Carlos. You know, that's easier.
I know.
Okay. So years later in December, Carlos was arrested after stealing a motorcycle from a bicycle repairman. When questioned by police, he admitted to 14 different thefts. As a result, a court ordered him to spend 20 days at a juvenile reform program.
Oh, okay. Those are not usually good.
I didn't see anything about it being particularly bad, but
okay.
After his release, he met Jorge Ibanez. The two became close and started committing crimes together. So clearly the reform program didn't work in his favor. In January of 1971, he and Carlos committed a string of 4 robberies, collecting millions in pesos, which they spent on luxury clothes and items.
Okay.
They were arrested later that month and posted bail shortly after. Once free, the two hopped on a train to Mar del Plata, where they continued their crime spree. 4 months after their arrest, the two entered an auto shop in Vincent Lopez at around midnight, armed with a pistol. Inside, they found the shop owner, his wife, and their 10-month-old baby.
Uh-oh.
Shortly after breaking in, Carlos shot and killed the owner, injured and sexually assaulted the wife, and shot towards the child but missed. So, luckily, the baby survived, but the two escaped with about 400,000 in pesos, which is around $380 today. So not a huge score.
No. Wow.
4 days later, they entered a nightclub where they stole about 2 million pesos, which is about 1,900 today.
Okay.
So they're working their way up. While looting the club, Carlos opened a door where he discovered 2 security guards who had fallen asleep. He immediately fired, killing both men.
Okay.
And you'll see in this story, that is a repeating theme? Part of this guy's story. Yes.
The security guards are sleeping? Or that he killed security guards? Oh, goodness.
Both.
Okay. I mean, you've got one job.
Yeah. Yeah. Just stay awake.
Stay awake.
So about 10 days later, they broke into a supermarket where they met a 61-year-old security guard who they shot and killed.
Oh, jeez.
After they looted 5 million pesos, or about $5,000, before fleeing, the two decided to drink a bottle of whiskey to celebrate.
Of course, as you do.
On June 13th, 1971, the two were driving down the highway when they spotted a 16-year-old sex worker and forced her into the car at gunpoint. Jorge sexually assaulted her, and Carlos forced her out of the car at gunpoint and ordered her to walk away without facing them. He then opened fire, shooting her 5 times in the back.
Oh my. Ugh.
11 days later, they committed a similar crime when they spotted a 22-year-old leaving her boyfriend's house. They forced her into the car at gunpoint, and Jorge assaulted her before Carlos forced her out of the car at gunpoint and killed her.
Wow, these guys are just on it.
They're on a quick crime spree, too. It's like 11 days, 12
Holy
days.
Holy cow! Like,
they just kept going after it, yeah.
That's quick!
On August 5th, 1971, Jorge was found dead in a crashed car that the two had been using for their crimes, with it being unclear if Carlos had killed him or if he died in the car accident.
Oh.
So, his accomplice is now dead.
Okay.
On November 15th, 1971, Carlos found a new criminal accomplice named Hector Somoza, and the two entered a supermarket where they were caught by a 50-year-old security guard who Carlos shot multiple times. This time, the two fled without taking anything.
Okay.
2 days later, the two broke into a car dealership where they found a sleeping security guard, once again, that Carlos shot and killed before escaping with 90,000 in pesos.
Wow.
8 days later, the two broke into another dealership and were met with another security guard, who they forced into the second floor at gunpoint and executed him. This time, jeez, they fled with 1.5 million in pesos.
Holy shit.
On February 1972, the two entered a hardware store where they found a security guard and forced the man into a small closet at gunpoint and locked him in there.
Oh, they left this one alive?
The store. They started looting the store and found a safe. As Carlos was trying to open the safe, Hector aggressively grabbed Carlos, who thought Hector was trying to kill him, so he shot Hector in the struggle.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. He returned to the trap security guard and shot him multiple times.
Okay. Dang it.
He returned to Hector's body with a blowtorch and started burning his face and hands before fleeing to disguise him. Not disguise, but like prevent him from being identified.
Where'd he get the blowtorch?
It was a hardware store.
Did you say it was a
hardware
store? Oh.
Yeah. So just
Jesus.
Probably in the store. Yeah. But Carlos forgot that Hector was carrying both men's ID cards and fled the scene without retrieving them.
Okay.
Not the brightest guy.
Wait a second. They took their IDs on a crime spree?
Yeah, and he let his accomplice hold his ID. I don't know. Did he not have pockets or something? Like, why would you let him hold the ID card?
Oh my. What the? Good. Lord.
Yeah. Not the smartest criminal in the world.
Well, no. That's okay.
Seems to be a common theme in a lot of criminals we talk about, though.
It for sure. For sure. Usually it's keep your mouth shut, but I think we might need to add don't let your accomplice hold your ID.
Hold your ID. Yeah, that's pretty stupid.
Good Christ.
When police arrived at the scene, they discovered Carlos's ID card and tracked down his family. His family told police of a suspected whereabout for Carlos, and the police were able to arrest him on February 4th, 1972. Before his trial, he managed to escape from prison and was on the run for 3 days before being arrested in downtown Buenos Aires.
Wow.
Yeah. His trial started on August of 1980, almost 8 years after he was arrested.
Yeah. Why did it
take
so long?
They probably don't have the the same
speedy
right
trial stipulation
here, right to a speedy trial. Yeah,
holy
probably
shit.
It's like, yeah, fucking leave him in there, even if he's not guilty, he's served his time.
Goodness. Holy. That is
so during
of 8 years.
8 years, yeah. I guess he did escape, but that was only like a year after he was arrested. So,
well, I would escape too if you just sat there and were like, just sit here and wait until we tell you it's your turn. I'd be like, okay, well, I guess you don't really want to prosecute me that bad.
So during his trial, he was found guilty of 11 counts of aggravated murder, 1 count of attempted murder, 3 counts of sexual assault, 2 counts of kidnapping, 17 counts of armed robbery, and 2 counts of theft, and was sentenced to life in prison.
Only 2 counts of theft?
Yeah, because the rest were armed robbery.
Oh, okay, okay. Gotcha. Yeah,
which I'm assuming carries a higher sentence, but I could be wrong.
Probably, yeah.
In 2003, he was sent to a psychiatric hospital after dressing up as Batman and setting a workshop in prison on fire, but was returned to prison after being deemed completely sane.
Batman.
It's the Batman part. That's why I included it. It's not really that important.
Where did he get a Batman costume?
Maybe it was paper mache. That happens a lot in prison. They use a lot of paper mache for...
right.
Made a paper mache Batman mask.
You know, in arts and crafts hour at the prison, he was like, I'm going to make myself
a Batman mask.
Costume.
Yeah.
That is...
As of 2025.
Great detail.
Yeah. I know. I just wanted to add it because I thought it was funny.
I love it.
As of 2025, Carlos had spent over 52 years in prison, making him the longest serving prisoner in South America.
Wow.
Yeah. He also tried to appeal to be executed, but they denied that. And he's still in prison, I believe, at, 73 years old.
When you're in prison and you say, can you execute me? They're probably like, yeah, we're not doing that. That's too easy of an out for you. I mean, it costs money too, but they're probably like, no, that's what you want. And we don't want you to have that.
True.
You know?
Yeah.
That's
let him suffer. That's fine. He killed 11 people.
That would, be kind my kind of stance on it, like, oh, you want this? Yeah, we're definitely not giving that to you.
Yeah.
My
but that
God.
Is the story of the Angel of Death. I don't know why they call him the Angel of Death. He doesn't seem very angelic, but
no, but he killed everyone.
Yeah, he's arrested at 20. He killed 11 people before he was 21. Like,
I wonder if he had any like kills when he was younger, because that seems like a steep escalation out of nowhere.
Well, it seemed like they were just B&Es and they killed whoever was there. If there was no one there, I'm sure. Because he had 14 other thefts when he was younger that he didn't kill anyone at. Like, he broke into a bicycle shop and stole a motorcycle, but like didn't kill that guy. And
right.
So I think he was just more of an opportunity killer or whatever they
could
call
be.
That. But
yeah.
Yeah.
My, that's a lot of deaths.
Yeah, and only less than 2 years.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Not good.
If I was a security guard in Buenos Aires, I'd have a grenade launcher. I'd have an Uzi. I'd be more equipped in the military. Like,
and
this guy's doing B&Es and stealing shit.
You'd be awake.
Yes. There'd be 14 empty cans of Monster around me. I would not be asleep.
No.
That's for sure.
Jeez.
Yeah.
I've worked security jobs, and yeah, they're boring and they're mundane. And there's times where you're just like, this is the dumbest thing I'm doing with my life right now. But I never fell asleep. I mean,
yeah, it's dumb. Wow.
I guess they figured who's going to catch them, right? And they found out.
Yeah, not their boss. The boss would have would have better been cut by your boss instead of this
100%. Instead of getting murdered by this angel of death. Yikes. Craziness. Yeah. Okay, well, are you ready for my cult story?
Yes, I am. Shout out to last week's chaser.
Yes. So it is cult time again. But this one's a little unique for a couple of reasons, and we'll get into that. Specifically, most of the cults that we have talked about have been in the U.S. and founded by men. This one's from Australia.
Interesting.
Right? Yeah. And it was started by a woman.
Oh, I know. I think I know exactly what you're talking about. They talk about If it's what I think it is, they make fun of it on the Bonfire podcast that I listen to. So
okay. We'll get into it, and then you'll have to let me know if it's the one that you're thinking of.
Okay.
I came across this story because dad was watching a show. I'm pretty sure it's on Netflix, and I think the name of it is like You Can't Ask That, but it's set in Australia, and each episode of this series, there's like four seasons of it or something, is a different topic where people anonymously submit questions for this genre of a topic. Some of them have been people who are dwarves or little people, and questions that you can't ask that. I think one of the episodes was people who have autism and common questions that people would want to ask but not say to somebody's face. There's been all sorts of different ones. But one of the episodes was people who have been in a cult. And all the cults that we've done have been US-based. And so when it was cults out of Australia, blatantly Australian, because all of the people on the show are Australian, I went, we've never done a cult outside of the U.S. And it's something that we have talked about so many times that for it to be outside of the U.S. is like, well, of course it happens in other countries, but why is it not as well known? So I dove into trying to find what were some of the Australian cults. And this one popped up as the biggest one for a long time in Australia. It's, like I said, it's Australian. It was started by a woman, but that's basically where the differences end, because it, as usual, as all of our other cults have, it involves religion and harming children. I don't know why that's like such a big thing.
Is religion a part, like, do you have to have a religion for a cult? Is that like one of the, like, you can't have a pizza without the dough type things?
No, I don't know. I think honestly, like, the fact that most of these cults have some kind of religious thing is because so many people are looking for something. And
spirituality.
Yeah, it's easy to find people who are looking for that spiritual connection. So we're going to start with the head of this cult. Her name was Anne Hamilton Byrne, and she founded the cult called The Family. However, her name at birth was Evelyn Edwards, but I'm going to be referring to her in this episode as Anne, because she did change her name to Anne. I don't know why. I couldn't really find any information why she did that, but nevertheless, she did. She was born in 1921 and grew up a couple of hours outside of Melbourne, Australia. She was the oldest of seven children. Her father was often absent from the home, working in other locations, which left her being raised primarily by her mother, which was not a good thing because her mother had some pretty big mental illness issues, and she spent time in mental health facilities, which meant that Anne spent some time living in an orphanage, because back then, that's kind of what you did. Like, if your parents were not able to raise you, you lived in an orphanage. And that is what happened to Anne. In 1941, she married Lionel Harris, and the couple had a daughter named Judith. Lionel died in a car accident in 1955, leaving Anne a widow, or Evelyn, as she was called at the time. Because at that point, she hadn't changed her name yet. The grief she experienced from the loss of her husband caused a spiritual awakening in her, and she changed her name to Anne Hamilton in 1959. A few years later, she married again, but that marriage didn't last long. In 1978, she married Bill Byrne, and the couple stayed married through the years until his death in 2001. Around the time of her second marriage, she started a philosophical discussion and religious group at the home of a parapsychologist named Rainer Johnson on the outskirts of Melbourne. This group was the beginning of what would eventually become known as The Family, the cult known as The Family. Anne began purchasing property near Johnson's home and built a meeting hall referred to as The Lodge. They started recruiting medical and middle-class professionals to join their discussion group / cult, because 100% it might have started as a spiritual discussion group, but it for sure morphed into a cult. Meetings were held 3 times a week at different facilities and properties that Anne started amassing around Melbourne area and its suburbs. One of the cult members happened to be the owner and administrator of New Haven, which was a psychiatric hospital. Several of the treating psychiatrists and even some of the patients at New Haven were members of the cult. Probably not. I don't know that you want to be getting psychiatric patients in your cult. It's great for your numbers, but not great for maintaining your legitimacy.
Well,
although I think they cared about legitimacy.
The cults ultimately lend themselves to people that could possibly belong in a psychiatric hospital.
Valid point. Yes. Anne wasn't just the leader of the cult. She also proclaimed herself to be the reincarnation of, you probably guessed Jesus it, Christ. Jesus Christ. Because they're all the reincarnation of Jesus Christ.
Seems to be a lot of Jesus Christ out there.
For sure. Who knew? Who knew he could come back as all of these different cult leaders? But apparently he has. The members of her inner circle were supposedly the reincarnations of the 12 apostles. So, you got to have your crew with you. Might as well. The focus of the cult wasn't purely Christian, though. It also leaned towards Hinduism. It was described as a mishmash of Eastern and Western religions with a dash of mysticism and a sprinkle of apocalyptic views thrown in, because you got to cover all your bases.
You know,
a little Christianity for the Christians, a little bit of Hinduism for that. You got to throw in, you know, a little bit of mysticism, and the world is going to end if you don't follow our rules. Therefore, follow our rules. Makes it easier, right? You got to keep your followers in line. The biggest rule of the cult, of course, as most of them are, was total obedience to the cult leader, Anne. You got to keep your followers in line. She dictated what to think, what to wear, what to eat, who to marry, and who to not marry. LSD was a commonly used product given to members, including the ones that were patients recruited from the psychiatric hospital, as well as the medical professionals, and unfortunately, children.
Was she involved in MKUltra just like Manson, or just coincidence?
You know, there was no mention of that specifically.
Okay.
But who knows?
Wouldn't surprise me.
Exactly. LSD played an integral part in the initiation process for children when they reached adolescence. So about 14 years old, kids were given LSD.
Fucking Jesus.
Yeah. Prior to that, though, the kids were also given psychiatric drugs during their rather rough upbringing. You might be asking, where did these kids come from? Over the years, the family obtained nearly 28 infants and young children. Some were the biological children of cult members. No. Well, sort of. I mean, technically, yes. Some of them were the biological children to the cult members, but many were gained through illegal adoptions that were arranged by lawyers, doctors, and social workers who were the members of the cult. So because this is, they had professionals in their membership, those members were negotiating where to get these kids from. And
that's not very common to see doctors and lawyers in a cult.
Exactly. It's
Scientology.
It's kind of, good point. It's definitely a little bit different. Anne went so far in her act of obtaining these children illegally to wear homemade clothing to appear and fake pregnancies. So she would wear like a fake belly underneath big smocks so that it looked like she was pregnant. So that when a new kid turned up, there was an explanation where this kid turned up and why this child suddenly appeared. The children were issued false birth certificates and had their names changed to indicate that Anne was their mother. So they all had the same last name. Anne was all of their mothers, even though they were illegal adoptions.
So they were adoptions. She's not getting money from the state for these, like a foster would,
I did not see anything like that. Okay. There's definitely some financial shenanigans going on, but not related to the children, it seemed. She just was hoarding children and then naming them after her.
Did she have a name for her religion? Did you already say that?
The family was the cult.
Just the family. Okay.
Yeah, which I think we've done a couple other episodes. It's interesting because I was trying to find information like, why is everybody like the family? I think there's one or two of them in the U.S. that are also called the family, but have nothing to do with this specific cult. I think that's just a common name.
The chaser, my chaser last week, the cult was named the family. So I just think.
Oh,
think
really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Interesting. So yeah, this was called the family. And Anne was supposedly the mother of all of these children, these 28 children. The children were kept fairly isolated at a private rural location where they were homeschooled by other cult members and taught that Anne was their mother. They didn't have access to the outside world. Discipline was strict, often involving physical violence, starvation, and emotional abuse because it's a cult, so why wouldn't have those things? The children had their hair dyed blonde and all had the same haircut. They wore identical clothes as well, so they basically all looked the same, which helped to remove any personal identity. And they wanted them all to look like her, even though they weren't anywhere near biologically related to her, because she's their mom, supposedly.
Supposedly, yeah. Is the key word.
The initiation process that I mentioned before, well, that involved them being dosed with LSD, sometimes very large amounts, left alone in a dark room to write out their trip, which sometimes lasted several days.
With the only visitors.
Yes. Well, they're 14-year-old children.
Good point. Probably doesn't take much to be a large dose.
Well, I mean, who knows? And so while they're locked in this dark room, high on LSD, the only people that were going in to see these kids and check on them was Anne and sometimes the psychiatrist that worked at the psychiatric hospital that were cult members.
Jesus. Yeah. This is fucked
up. Not a good situation. On two separate occasions, Anne took several of the children to an ashram in New York State where she was studying yoga. She also purchased a nearby piece of property close to the ashram. When the children were asked by the yogi that Anne was working with if they would like to stay with him, they excitedly said they would. They were like, he's really nice and it's neat here and there's stuff to do. And Anne took that as a betrayal of the children and, of course, punished them for it because how dare they betray her? Yes. She's a piece of work, for sure. But ultimately, the children would be Anne and the cult's downfall because in 1987, one of the children who had just become an adult was expelled from the group for her rebellious behavior. Her name was Sarah. She was one of the children brought into the cult under an illegal adoption. Sarah, when she got kicked out, Sarah contacted the police who began an investigation into the group and raided the properties. All of the children were removed. So I don't know how many there were at that time that were still living there, but all in, I saw anywhere from 14 to 28 children being in the group. When it was raided, I'm not sure how many children were removed, but there were a bunch. Soon after that, Anne and her husband fled to the U.S. where they lived for several years. During that time, investigators were building a case against Anne and the cult. Several members admitted to the illegal adoptions and the forgeries. Anne and her husband were arrested in 1993 and extradited back to Australia. They were charged with conspiracy to commit fraud and perjury for the false registration of the births of the children that were not their own biological children. Remember, these were kids that they got under those fake adoptions. However, those charges were eventually dropped. I'm not quite sure why, but Anne and her husband pleaded guilty to making a false declaration, and the fine that they received for this was $5,000. That's it.
That's fishy.
Yeah. But one of the lead investigators was like, the only thing that we can go after them for legally are these false birth certificates. And that's what they pinned the whole case on. They're like, okay, well, we'll get them on what we can get them. And unfortunately, all they ended up getting in trouble for was a false declaration and then fined $5,000.
The more things I learn about that involve like child abuse, the more I find that they just get swept under the rug or covered
100%.
Up. 100%. Like, it's ridiculous. It's, usually it happens in America, but I guess Australia does it too, which is weird.
Everybody does it, unfortunately. Other members of the cult were convicted for falsely obtaining tens of thousands of dollars over several years. There were also civil lawsuits brought against Anne directly. One of her granddaughters sued her for multiple reasons, including psychological and psychiatric mistreatment, malnourishment, and cruel and inhuman treatment. She was awarded about $250,000. Another former cult member sued for financial losses. She claimed that she had given Anne over $400,000 to purchase multiple real estate parcels, but the property was never transferred to her. So she gave Anne money, and Anne was like, okay, you give me money, you're buying this property from me, and then I'll sign it over to you. And that woman never got her property, but gave Anne over $400,000. Yep. And she was awarded only $250,000. So she didn't even make her money back. It was estimated that during the active years of the cult, Anne had amassed over $150 million worth of property, land, and cash. Anne lived the last few years of her life in a nursing home suffering from dementia. She passed away at the age of 97 in 2019.
Oh, wow. That's a crazy story.
It's wild.
That was not the one I was thinking of from the bonfire. No.
Okay. Which one do they talk about on the bonfire?
I don't remember the name of it, but it involved like something light. It was like light language, and it was just this crazy lady, and she would like...
It's not the sex cult?
No, I don't think it's a sex cult, but she like... Okay. I think she took... What is it? Colloidal silver? The stuff that turns you blue?
Colloidal silver?
Colloidal, yeah. It was like a weird one that they were talking about. Yeah. But
so there is a sex cult that we watched. I'm trying to think. It's not the Nexium. It's, oh gosh. There's a... I can't think of it now. There's a documentary about it on, I'm pretty sure it was Netflix, that we watched last year. And it was started by a woman, and it's a story. I don't think that, I mean, it's definitely an interesting story and cult, but I don't... For the fact that we're mom and son, I don't think that either one of us wants to hear that story.
No, I'm good.
No, we don't want to cover that.
So I found the cult that they were talking about. It's called Love Has Won, ran by Amy Carlson. And she claimed to... be able to cure people with cancer with the power of love, and her body was found mummified on their compound in Colorado.
Oh, we gotta do that.
We gotta do that one. Oh,
that's crazy town.
It says she died in Ashland, Oregon. That's really interesting. How did her body end up on Colorado? Huh. Okay, yeah, we're gonna have to look more into that one. That's interesting.
Yeah. Crazy.
Weird.
Ooh, I don't like it. Do you have a chaser for us today? Ooh, I asked first.
I'll go first. Okay. My chaser is yet another audio drama. This one is a little different than other ones. It's more of a movie form instead of a TV format. So it's one 2 hour long podcast.
Okay.
And it's like this guy wakes up and he hears a voice in his head that no one else can hear. Like he has a chip implanted in his brain.
Oh, I don't like that.
It makes him do a bunch of crimes.
Oh.
It's super good. It's a really good. If you have like a 2 hour road trip you guys got to do, just pop that on and it's.
Time will fly like nothing.
Shipworm.
Shipworm, huh?
Yeah. It's probably one of the best like produced audio dramas I've heard in a while, but I really enjoyed it.
Cool. Well, my chaser is I found the documentary of the cult that I was just mentioning.
Okay.
The documentary is on Netflix. It's called Orgasm Inc., The Story of One Taste. And it's a very interesting story that we will never cover on this podcast because it is a sex cult. And neither one of us wants to talk about that with each other because it's too strange. And if anyone, if you don't know the story, watch the documentary and then you'll go, yeah, I don't think that mom and son really want to talk about that with each other and talk about the story. Because there's some details in there that make you go, it's icky for sure. So, but it's a really interesting story about the cult, but it definitely makes your skin crawl a little bit. So
like those sex cult things are gross.
I mean, most cults have a sex component to them, but this one is pretty much all sex stuff. It's a huge financial thing too, but the premise of it is 100% sex.
That's gross.
It's definitely a gross thing, but it was a good watch, so I'll recommend that.
Okay. I'll have to check that out.
Yeah. I think that wraps us up for today.
Brings us,
For sure.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Make sure to check us out next Wednesday with a new episode. Drop us a review. Thumbs up, share, all that fun stuff.
Yep. It's so easy to share. Just share a link.
Yeah, just text it to a friend or something.
Yes. Yeah. All right. Love you, bud.
Bye.
Bye. Hey, friends. Thank you for supporting our podcast. Please share our show with your brutal and bizarre friends. Give us a boozy follow on your favorite podcast platform. If you're feeling extra generous, we'd appreciate a 5-star rating or review as well. But maybe do that sober so all the letters are in the right place.
You can find all our contact information in the show notes. We love hearing from you, and if you're interested in helping us stock the bar for our future boozy episodes, you can find our Patreon link in the show notes as well.